Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ask Catherine. These are questions as of February 13th, and we will be publishing this on Friday on February 17th. This is the last Ask Catherine of the month. February is a short month, and so next week is the last week. So let's just dive in. Welcome, Carolyn. Thank you for joining us.
Hello.
Carolyn and I answer questions on Wednesdays and Thursdays. So we record Ask Catherine on Wednesdays, and then we dive into Financial Rebellion on Thursdays. And tomorrow, Carolyn, we're talking about CBDCs and sex.
Right.
Yeah. So if you haven't checked out the latest hilarious cartoon, we've got Jeremy on a roll of CBDCs and sex. Okay. Organized by categories, we have one question in cash and precious metals. Dear Catherine, I'd like to purchase gold and silver, but do not know where to begin. I live in Birmingham, Alabama, and I'm willing to travel. How much of a markup on the spot price is reasonable? Also, I noticed that Cougar Ants were not on the gold and silver payment calculator and wondered why. Thank you for your advice. You are a blessing to humanity. It depends on where you buy your gold and silver. So the two dealers I use are Treasure Island in North Dakota and Volunteer Metals in Tennessee. You can talk to Volunteer about whether you can pick them up from them. So that's one possibility, but most people get them in the mail. So you want to make sure when you get them in the mail, you get in a way that you can take them home and not necessarily have it associated with your house. So sometimes people get post offices and in a post office a couple communities over, or in a private store where they don't necessarily know where you live. How much of the markup on the spot prices premium is reasonable? It really depends on the market. And it's one of the reasons I like to price with several dealers and note the time so that I'm looking at the percentage premium at a given time. But there is almost always a premium. You said that Cougar Ants are not on the gold and silver calculator. They are on the gold. They're not on the silver. I can't tell you why, other than Franklin, when he made up the original list, didn't put them there. I'm used to buying silver Cougar Ants in Europe, but I never bought silver Cougar Ants in the U.S. that I remember. It's interesting that I don't know why the dealer here in Holland just always has plenty of Cougar Ants, silver Cougar Ants on hand. But I'll talk to Franklin about adding it on the silver equivalents, but it is on the gold under South Africa. It's listed by country. Okay, let me keep going. Nothing under geopolitics and financial markets, which is interesting because that's a sort of hot area. And we just recorded money in markets and a lot going on there. Hi, Catherine. This is from somebody who describes their personal situation and is interested in getting help and sort of looks to me like you've probably done a very prudent job of organizing and managing your resources from what you describe. But you're concerned about the fact that the CBDCs and the sort of total control is coming in and how to protect it. My recommendation, first of all, I don't do investment advisory, so I no longer do consultations. I stopped doing it in 2018 because the regulatory structures wanted me to give them so much data on my clients. I just said, no, I'm not going to collect that data. I'm not going to give it to you. So I'm going to stop doing this. Anyway, I cannot do individual consultations. However, what I would do with you, if I were you, is I would take the time to listen to some of the equity overviews on the Solari report and see what topics you are interested in pursuing. And then I would budget some time to learn more. If you wanted to get a review on your situation, I would talk to, see if you can find a financial planner who you're comfortable with, who understands sort of the real risks in the environment. First question you can ask anybody to test them is, what are CBDCs and how can they impact me and my assets? If they can't answer that question.
We did a template letter to, I think it was financial planner or financial advisor, and one to an insurance broker. And that brings up questions about, you know, the effect of the all-cause mortality on the insurance industry. And that's another right. To test them on whether they're familiar with those issues.
Right. But what I would do, there's all solutions require you to invest time and learn and get a position where you can make your own decisions. And so what I would do is I would see if you could find a financial planner who's knowledgeable about what's going on in the environment and have them just help to educate you. And first, I would just focus on education and not make any surprising, you know, or big changes for now. I just get yourself educated. The important question is going to be, if things get really difficult in your area, who are the people you're going to depend on? And how do you build the relationships within your community or with your local farmers or business food, business entrepreneurs and other people in your area who you can look to help and who you can help? So there's really going to be, I don't know how you describe it, the people who watch your back. Who's going to watch your back when trouble comes in your area?
And this person also said she'd just been divorced, which is a particularly good time to connect with other people in your area. We just recorded an interview with Michael Schumann, who has written a number of books on local investing. And even if you don't have a particular interest in local investing, which I think is a good idea to consider, he goes over a lot of points about, in particularly in his books, but also listen to the interview, which will be posted soon, on the importance of investing in your house, in your surroundings, in yourself. So those are things that you didn't particularly write about in your letter, but those are things to consider. And
right.
Sometimes digging a well is a good investment.
So I would start a learning plan and a learning journey. See if you can find somebody to help coach you. But one thing never to do is never make any changes or act out of fear.
And don't move everything at one time, right. because of market variations. If you start investing in anything, a big chunk at one time, you know, in hindsight, you can look and you might have done it at the bottom of the market or at the top of the market. So, you know, doing gradual things is preferable to doing something all at once.
Right. There's going to be a wealth of information in the Building Wealth curriculum that comes out by the end of the month, is our hope. So that could be helpful too. I go through it in the second quarter equity overview in 2022. So if you go back and listen to the last, I don't know, 4 to 6 equity overviews, there's a lot of material that can help. Question, my daughter, 26, is now trying to save up for a wedding in fall 2024. She still has about 60,000 in government student loan debt and 37K in private student loan debt. She has a job in healthcare and is avoiding the you-know-whats, so her job may be jeopardized. We've offered to pay off the private debt as co-signers and wanting to help her out. She's not sure how to plan for a wedding so far in advance in a world where she knows there's great uncertainty. Any suggestions? She's renting an apartment but could move at any time if she gets another job. I'm hoping she can find something in naturopathic, holistic, functional medicine setting, but she reports very few, if any, such opportunities in Pennsylvania. She wanted me to ask you what you would advise in a situation regarding balancing the wedding planning expenses, loan expenses, and having emergency cash on hand. I thought I'd share this. We mustn't let our guards down. Dr. Lee Vallee of Truth for Health has a very helpful and informative website. Her interview last January with Todd Callender was especially enlightening in understanding how agreements signed in 2005 around the world impact us on a local county, set the groundwork for removing our basic human rights when a pandemic is declared. So I would not spend a dime on a wedding if I had any debt. I would, you know, have a huge party on my parents' or friends' acre or land and, you know, have a potluck or something. You can have a great deal of fun. My first wedding, this wonderful friend of ours, Doug Hall, who was a poet, shot his pig named Charlie and barbecued it. They all stayed up all night barbecuing. They dug a pit and they cooked Charlie, which was enough to feed all of us. And Doug wrote a poem dedicated to my first husband and me called On Eating Charles. And we had a blast, but it was very low budget. You know what I mean?
Two of my favorite weddings, and I always said if I ever got married, I'd do it over my lunch hour. Two of my favorite weddings, one was I went to school at Bryn Mawr College, and they had a beautiful, beautiful leaded glass, great big, great room in the old library. And my friend was marrying a Puerto Rican guy from Philadelphia. And it literally was potluck with lots of his friends locally. And they had a band who was probably friends of his too. And we had a ball. They were married in the garden. And I suspect they spent very little money on the wedding. The other interesting one was when I was at a law firm out in Omaha. And we had a partner who had never been married, but she was marrying a man who had children and had been married before. And they had a great big party and I got a beautiful invitation. And we showed up and found out it was a surprise wedding reception. There were no gifts, of course, because people didn't know it was going to be a wedding. And it was great fun. So my advice is be creative. Right. On the issue of healthcare, I think that there will be a lot of alternative medicine practices set up, perhaps even with insurance plans with hospitals that are not enrolled in the Medicare, Medicaid system, and a lot of alternative things because people are not happy with some of the developments in the standardized government-supported medicine. So I think that going into some of the naturopathic or similar fields is a good idea. And there's a fair amount on the internet about that type of thing if you go to some of the alternative sites and see what they're doing. But if I had it to do over again, that might be something that I would consider doing.
I just have to tell you, on my second wedding, I got married in a business suit because, you know, I was early on Wall Street, and so I needed clothes for work. So I got a navy blue business suit. I got married in that, and one person was so outraged that I didn't have a bouquet, they went out and bought me one. But it was at the Union Club, so it was at St. James Episcopal Church on 72nd and Madison. But it cost hardly anything to get married in St. James, and probably pretty well endowed church. And then Jeffrey was a member of the Union Club. And it was only $500 for the whole Union Club. And we invited tons of people. But I had told the guy who ran the Union Club, was a fabulous guy, this much champagne and no more. So we bought this really cheap champagne. We bought a couple cases, but then they shut them off. So as soon as they shut everybody off, the senior partner, Jeffrey's firm, took us all over to an Italian restaurant and paid for everything from then on. His name was Quisenberry. He was great. And he was the leading mortgage-backed securities attorney on Wall Street at the time. You know, Solomon Brothers was his client. So anyway, but our wedding cost $500.
My impression is that people who are in lower income brackets tend to spend a lot more on weddings than people who actually have some level of wealth. In a lot of cases, and particularly Italian families or people who've emigrated recently, the wedding is a big deal, particularly for the parents of the bride. But in these financial markets, I'm not sure that that's a very good dedication of one's wealth.
Well, here's what I do think is good, and that is it's a wedding is also a crowdfund. You know, so a wedding is a time where everybody contributes a little to helping you get started in life.
Right.
So whatever, you know, whatever that is, organize, you know, everybody wants to support and help. So organize your gifts so it really is a good investment for them and for you. And really helps you get going in life. Don't waste it on things you really won't love and really won't use. I would be exceptionally practical about the wedding because I think what you want in a wedding is something that's really a beautiful, beautiful occasion. And I find the more money you spend, the more uptight everybody gets, and it takes away from having a beautiful, beautiful occasion.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so that would just be me. And I would definitely help them not get hammered with debt. So if you can lean in and help, I think that's great. But I again, I would focus on getting rid of the debt first and foremost. Okay.
Absolutely. Get off anything that you've co-signed on. Pay it off.
Yeah. Get everything paid off. Thank you, feedback. Thank you for all the work you're doing. I'd like to report on several seemingly unrelated control grid incidents I've been experiencing the past 3-4 days with big box online retailers. The first is Best Buy. Tried to place an online order by paying with 2 different credit cards. Both times the order got canceled. I called the customer service department, who told me there's a block on my account in the back end. No other information was available. The second experience is presently with Overstock, where I placed an order which was canceled 3 times by their system. And the third retailer is IKEA, where I placed an order which was canceled just once. In all 3 instances, I've been a customer of these retailers in the past. It seems the control is coming from one centralized place. I would very much rather support small stores, but I find it impossible with the home renovation work I'm currently doing. Thank you, Catherine. Normally, when this kind of thing happens to me, we call the credit card company and say what gives, and that fixes the problem. I don't know if you have any thoughts, Carolyn, but usually, you know, this does happen. Sometimes when I'm making a campaign contribution, you know, nothing will work. And I can tell there's definitely sabotage going on.
There also is more of a problem with debit cards, which are riskier than credit cards. But sometimes location of where you are makes a difference in whether a debit card goes through. And that may be the case for credit cards, too. So if you're traveling, it's a good idea to call ahead and say that you're charging. For something like Best Buy, I don't know why that would be a problem, or IKEA. So I don't know.
So next question. Hi, Catherine. I'd love to hear your view about the Florian currency in Holland, how it works, and if you would recommend for other countries to start a similar type currency system. I know nothing about it. So there's my ignorance. Let me look. I don't see anything online. There's nothing here. Huh, isn't that interesting?
I have never heard of it. Alternative currencies are a good idea generally, but of course, yeah, you have to do it correctly. Or...
Okay, if you have any information, just send it. I'd love to know. On another note, I'd love to see you and Oracle Girl meet online and interview with each other. She would be able to talk to you about the patterns in Holland, the earth grid, and support from the frequency perspective. I attach her details. I know nothing about her. It's interesting. Her tagline is, embody more love on this planet. The future is positive. Dream. Rebuild your societies. Purify yourself and all beings. Sounds like some good things to do. Very much in the coming clean. Okay. I appreciate your letting me know about that. Firearm training. So this is somebody who listened to my interview with Harry Blazer, and he was mentioning the different places to get firearms training. I have no idea what they are. NRA does have firearms training, but you know, there are more advanced courses that can help. And I just, a member of Gun Owners of America, and also have donated off and on to a group that's really good. Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. When I used to ask staff who was the single most effective group trying to protect the Second Amendment, it was the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. And their URL is jpfo.org. I would check and see if any of these groups, who they recommend, but you're going to have to research and find yourself. I will try and ask people for the best courses, but I just don't know offhand.
There may be some ideas at your local sheriff's department.
Yeah, and your local gun shop. We have a great gun shop in Hardeman County next to, outside of Bolivar. And that's exactly a great idea. I'd go to the gun shop and ask them, but I'd also ask the sheriff's department. When we had the home invasions in Hickory Valley, the whole Hickory Valley Women's Club went and got training. And we got this fabulous guy. A lot of times you get people who work in the police or sheriff's office, and they do this sort of nights and weekends. And we got a course from a guy who was in the sheriff's office in a different county. And he gave an absolutely stupendous course. So that's a great idea. Have you looked at the health and healing information and resources being provided by Anthony William Medical Medium? Yes, in fact, I have most of his books, but you just informed me about his new book, Brain Saver. So I bought that book and the recipe book that goes with it. So I'm looking forward to seeing it. And you mentioned that Djokovic sort of plugged into in his work and did a video about it a couple of years ago, which I didn't know. You mentioned in many people, toxic metals rule the roost. They control someone's life, how important it is to get out. And I couldn't agree with you more, because I've done a lot of heavy metals detox in my life and what a difference it makes. Anyway, so I got the new book and I appreciate your mentioning that. He has come very highly recommended. And I do believe that there is such a thing as a medical medium, and their work is very worthwhile. There's another one who I love, Carolyn. Do you remember what her name was?
No.
She's a medical medium. Let me see if I can find her name. She's really good.
I have friends.
Carolyn Meese.
Oh, I was going to. When you said the word Carolyn, that was whose name came to mind.
Yeah, I think she's terrific. There's an energetic healer we all know and love. So they also look at health. It's so interesting because you will see somebody diagnosed with cancer and then they do an energetic, you know, they go through an energetic healing process and then boom, no cancer, and their doctors can't fathom it. In Joe Dispenza's book, he talks about his doctors, you know, who told him he needed these radical surgery and he'd never really walk again. And then within 12 weeks, he heals himself with his mind and they're in a state of shock. Another great one is Suzanne Summers' book, Knockout, you know, where she went and interviewed all the doctors who were healing cancer naturally. That's another one I love. Question, I was surprised you did not follow up on the Veritas videos. Why? You guys thought it was fake, but the second one convinced me otherwise. So I don't know if they were faked or not. It's possible they weren't, but there, you know, there were some things that were odd or off about it. And I didn't follow up on it because I thought it was sort of a distraction relative to some of the other stories that were going on. So it just wasn't a focus. I don't know. Did you want to say anything about it?
Well, you know, limited hangout is a possibility. I didn't take it terribly seriously either. It was kind of interesting, but I don't think that Pfizer conducting heavy duty gain of function research is the heart of the problem. I doubt that they even can do that, certainly legally, but I just think I agree with you. It's a distraction.
Right. But it was certainly an entertaining one.
Yeah.
I have no objection. In the interview I did with Blue Tiger, I talked about the fact that the Netherlands had been so successful in addressing their pension fund realities in the 70s, unlike the U.S., which failed to come clean. But then something went wrong in recent years. What went wrong were two things. The first thing and the primary thing was lower interest rates. And then the second thing was financial fraud. Those two things really sort of drained everybody around the world across the board. And there was no way the Netherlands could have avoided that. Catherine in the news again. This is a good article about pushing back against CBDCs on the Christian platform Life Site News. Here's why we should all avoid central bank digital currencies. Yeah, it's great. The more we see those, Mercola did one too. So, and then Bush, John Bush, and with Corbett's help is doing this campaign, which is great. So all these things are terrific. Health and food. Dear Catherine, what is the best power of attorney form to use when going into the hospital or any other medical care system? I think what you mean is, I don't know quite what they're talking about.
Power of attorney. She's talking about a health, he or she. Yeah. Talking about a healthcare power of attorney. A durable financial power of attorney is different. Healthcare power of attorney is just used in the healthcare area. And you also can, a living will is often combined with the power of attorney. Yes, it does make a difference what state you're in, because different state laws have different rules about pulling the plug, basically, to put it in simple terms. In Ohio, and I suspect in many states, the Bar Association has a form. And in Ohio, that form is endorsed by a number of the big hospital systems, so that they apparently were involved in drafting it. And it's a form and you can just fill it out. And the one that I'm familiar with actually gives a lot of editorial information about what various things mean. So yes, it's a good idea to have one. Yes. I give people advice, or I would advise anybody doing that, to select someone to be your agent, your healthcare agent, who is someone who will fight for you, not who's necessarily your best friend or your closest relative. You want somebody who will go to the mat and take you out of order that you be taken out of a hospital that's not serving you well, and, you know, make a big deal if they're not paying attention to things that are really serious. And I have witnessed a friend of mine taking care of another friend of mine who was having heart issues, and the nurses weren't paying much attention. And the agent, and of course, the person who was having the heart issues wasn't really very conscious because she was having heart issues. And her friend stepped in and made a big deal about how she needed to be taken care of. So yes, it's important to have one. The form itself, it will depend on state law, how much you authorize in terms of things like pulling the plug or denying you of hydration and food. And usually most people want to give the most discretion possible so that they are not put on life support for 10 years. And therefore, usually the forms explain that if you want the most that's available under state law, then you check and initial a particular place. So
the first thing I would do is I would recommend anybody wants to plan on doing a healthcare power or healthcare proxy, you want to go to the Five Wishes Aging and Dignity form. I'll put the link in the show notes. It's agingwithdignity.org. And you get the Five Wishes form, and it helps you plan and it helps you figure out how to write one. But then we have four different interviews with Joe Klein Seberhar, who ran the largest hospice in Iowa and is an attorney. And there's everything you could ever want to know about figuring out how to do a healthcare proxy in those interviews. But Carolyn's right. Then you want to take it to your state and make sure you know sort of what your state rules are.
And what I have seen in hospitals and rehab facilities and nursing homes lately is stay out of them as much as possible.
Right. We just did that interview with Matt Hale and Jennifer Walters about navigating a failed healthcare system.
It's really frightening. And stay away from those social workers, so-called social workers.
Right. Right. Well, it was, when I basically spent 3 months sort of helping one of my best friends in 2010, go from assisted living to nursing home to hospital to hospice and to death. And I walked through the whole process. And if it hadn't been for her excellent planning and her niece and I, we were like food dogs. But I just can't tell you all the things that would have gone wrong if we hadn't been there. Okay, question. Somebody is writing about the studies that Paul Thomas and several other people did comparing unvaccinated to vaccinated. And these studies are very important and powerful, and a great deal of effort has been made to suppress them because it's the one, the last thing they need is an honest control group that shows how vaccination really does deteriorate health or has historically. Anyway, so you wrote in and put in some of the bar charts, and I couldn't agree more. And Carolyn and I were just talking about this, but Polly Tommy, when she was doing Vax2, lots of people who weren't vaccinated started showing up. And a lot of them were families where the first child had been vaccine injured, so they didn't vaccinate the other kids. And it was astonishing how healthy the unvaccinated kids were. It was just absolutely astonishing.
You can watch Vax2 free on the Children's Health Defense site. You go on the TV part and there's a place for movies and you can watch that.
Question. Here's something shared in the C19 group. Quote, in an AI-driven healthcare world, how does the patient's role change? We're going to move from the world of quantified self, where some of us use our wearable watches or Fitbits to track our sleep, on our steps to the world of quantified health, where the meaningful information like the synthesis of your sleep score, your cardiovascular fitness, or your mental health score might flow to your doctor. I like to think of it almost like a FICO score for your wellness. We can be more empowered as patients using this information, be partners in our care with our clinical team. Page 31, AI already transfers medicine, aid in depression. Other projects under development include two at the Harvard-affiliated McLean Hospital, one to identify people at risk for developing major depression so they can enroll in prevention trials, and another to predict optimal treatment for people with depression. Oh, everybody's a guinea pig to be played with. It's so nuts. Okay, from subscriber input, looking for recommendations for ordering organic food directly. I've been buying locally from my local organic shop, but the prices are getting so high, it's no longer feasible. One thing to look at if you're near a terminal market is teaming up with other people and going and buying wholesale in the early mornings at the terminal markets. So 10 people to get together like a shopper's club, and you can get, you know, when I was doing this, you could get, you know, most organic foods for 50% of what they would buy retail at the store. And you can also, you know, a lot of stuff you can buy bulk through the mail. And the same way, if you do organize and do a shopper's club, it does not have to be certified organic if the product is good quality, as I know many people don't have the money to be officially certified. Another thing is some places will make you a deal where if you do gardening, you could swap gardening for food, a way of doing labor. Good quality is good enough. I would prefer to buy direct, especially if they do bulk discounts. However, if the distributor has good prices, you can recommend if you want. My main concern is just lowering the food budget without lowering the quality. The organic beef website that prompted the question is Montana Legacy Ranch Shop Organic Beef. I saw this at a shop and wondered if you would buy directly from them. Turns out if you can, for three quarters the price in many cases. So I've been buying through online systems from local farmers in Tennessee, and I just find them by word of mouth. And I have no problem. In our case, we ordered, you know, we bought them online and did everything online, but then we drove over and picked it up because we could. And that was easier. I just think, you know, plenty of these people are out there by word of mouth. I would definitely check. Weston Price has a directory of, you know, sort of sources and companies. But the other thing is the edible, what's the name of their website? It's the Edible series of magazines. If your area has an edible magazine, that is another great way to find sources.
Yeah, mine is called Edible Ohio. So I'm assuming they do edible and then the name of the state or whatever.
Yeah, so their website is Edible Communities, and you can see if there's one near you. But I would definitely see if you can organize with others, and I would definitely see if you could. I'd find the Weston Price chapter in your place, and I'd see if there's an Edible Communities magazine in your place, and then I'd check out if there's a terminal market where all the grocery stores and restaurants go buy wholesale, and you can just walk in and start buying cartons too. Okay, what chemicals are used in the processing of meat cuts, including organic meats? Concerning all normal meat cuts of meat, not processed meats like sausage or deli. When I say processing meat, I'm directly referring to the whole cut of meat, like the chicken breast or sirloin steak. The one exception you could include, been looking for a comprehensive list on what chemicals and products are used in the processing, both required chemicals and what is typically found outside. I'm getting hits for mostly deli meats. Are there comprehensive lists? Carolyn, could you take this question and send it to Pete Kennedy and see if we can get an answer?
Sure.
Yeah, so Pete would know. Or Pete would know who would know, that I'm sure. Okay, no questions in local gatherings. We're working on trying to do a local gathering on Good Friday in Tennessee, in Western Tennessee, at the Bird Dog Museum, where we had the last one. Okay, recommended links. Carolyn's been working hard and has picked out some links. So Carolyn, why don't you walk us through recommended links?
Okay, just a minute. Let me get the document. The first one is a very interesting, fairly long interview with the author of a new book. His name is Peter Schweitzer, and the name of the book is The China Influence. And it is fascinating. He's done a huge amount of research about, he talks about the Chinese influence in education, in the banking arena, in big tech. And there's a very long discussion about big tech and how they've basically been Zuckerberg and Elon Musk and the whole, all of them have been effectively forced to self-censor in order to get into the Chinese market. And there's a section on politicians and very juicy stories about Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden / Hunter Biden and the compromising that has gone on. The Chinese way of infiltrating a market has to do with ingratiating themselves and providing favors and maybe allowing one to say a few negative things about China in order to look good, but basically you have to compromise in order to get that market. And so there have been a lot of efforts to go into the Chinese market and by, you know, most companies and what they actually have to do in order to get that market share. And it's relatively frightening. He advises against investing in the Chinese markets because you're basically supporting the Chinese military. It's all very interesting. You might not agree with all of it, but it is very interesting view of what's involved.
It's kind of interesting because what he's documenting is for the Chinese that it's easier to buy the American leadership than it is to have a war with America.
Right. So we're like in the middle of a war, except you don't look at it as a war. You know, they're sort of taking over the the educational system, big tech, you know, all of these areas. And you wake up one day and, oh, my God, you know, there's right. a huge amount of propaganda.
Right.
So
well, part of it, as the U.S. leads the effort for a group of globalists to build a global empire, the money flowing in and controlling that empire is from everywhere. So yeah. while the legal structure still looks like it's the American voters, the actual power structure reflects the sort of GDP percent of every place coming in and controlling the dollar syndicate. So the dollar syndicate is globalizing in this manner.
Right.
That's the way I would describe it. Okay, next.
Next one is
ChatGPT.
Has to do with another one on ChatGPT. This is new software that's basically an enormous step forward or backward, depending on your view, in software that is AI software that can write movie scripts. We did something last week on a movie script written by an AI program. And this is giving some information like ChatGPT will have 1.5 trillion parameters, movies, video, art. Everyone can create an avatar. And what this article focuses on is how many jobs can be replaced by AI. And the potential for changing our culture when you have AI talking to AI systems, you know, what happens then? What if they try to incorporate ethics, you know, an ethics measure in here? What does the AI think about our political systems? You know, it's just some very interesting questions. I thought that was what's very interesting about the article, some of the questions that come up in thinking about how the applications would be applied in this transhumanist agenda.
So we did a big interview with Harry Blaser, went and got one of the top experts on AI and did a big interview. I think there are two takeaways here. One is AI is expected to dramatically change employment practices within different industries. So if you are a truck driver and trucks go to driverless trucks, 100,000 people in America get laid off. And over a million globally. This is expected to dramatically change the employment practices. And that means you want to understand how AI is going to impact what you do and how you do it, and whether or not you can use it to advantage as opposed to getting rolled over by it. So John and I told the story in Money and Markets last week about an article that said AI was going to replace most supermodels. Sophia Smallstrom just did a great newsletter on ChatGPT and talked about one of the artists who used the program to make his art. And he won a big art contest. And the question was, you know, should he be allowed to win when it was actually the AI that made the art, but it was just him managing, directing the AI?
Well, and when you use the AI, you don't know what the programmers put into it. You know, what are the assumptions? And that's scary when you are not someone who's in a position to evaluate what the input is. The other thing is that there are a lot of professions. It's not just jobs that involve mechanical things that can be replaced at this point. This article's talking about how copywriters, for example, may have no work at all because there are AI programs that can do copywriting.
Right. You want to understand it well enough to use it if it applies to what you do. Because it you know, it is going to roll through like a tsunami. And unfortunately, part of the problem is if they're hooking the smart grid up to every place, it's going to be more and more difficult to get away from the trance.
Right.
So they just put fiber in to, you know, into our neighborhood here. Oh, and it feels like the trance is just invading. It's horrible. Comment, the Visa offering 10,000 to small restaurants was a story from several years ago. Thank you for that. Good to know. I thought it was more current, but it wouldn't surprise me if they've been doing it all along. And they point out that surveillance balloons have been around for years. That is absolutely true. And they bought Secret Don't Tell, which is my favorite. I think the number one book on, if you don't understand mind control, the number one book to read. They say, I was doing some research for a book I'm writing and came across USAF records that are decades old about manned balloons, much higher than 30K. Yep, that's the case. Okay, Carolyn, what's next?
I included something that's not brand new. It was, I think, 2021, but it is a video of hearings in Shasta County, California about chemtrails. And there are a lot of scientists, pilots, meteorologists, U.S. fish and game biologists, neurologists, talking about nanoparticles. Just this is a really good overview of what many of the considerations are having to do with chemtrails, which I'm quite satisfied exist. And they do explain why chemtrails are not contrails and what some of the things in the chemtrails are that are damaging. But if you want a nice summary in one place of what the risk of chemtrails are from people who really know the on-the-ground results, like killing of animals and that sort of thing, things, nanoparticles going into the brain, this is a really good ability. Yeah. Good link.
It is a good one. We did an interview with Clifford Carnicom in 2010, a sort of two-hour special on the global, he calls it global spraying, he doesn't call it chemtrails. And then we did an interview with Dr. Gwen Scott about sort of how to detox from what's in the spraying. And those are both, I recommend, they're very, very good and still very pertinent. Okay, Carolyn, what's next?
The next one has to do with another WEF related link from American Thinker in this case. The comment is the WEF and Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government, which we did not know anything about, and we looked it up. And it appears to be a Republican inspired select subcommittee, a select committee being a new one that crops up for a particular reason. And they appear to be aimed, at least at this point, in looking at some of the FBI abuses of citizens. And this link indicates that there is a Democratic congressperson, Texan Democrat, Colin Allred, who was a WEF Young Global Leaders trainee, if you will, which our friend up north was one of, and Angela Merkel was one of, out of the WEF, and that he was one of those, and he's now a Democrat on the Select Subcommittee on Weaponization of the Federal Government. Take it for what it is. You know, is he a plant? I don't know, but there seem to be some good people. Jim Jordan, is that the
Yeah, so Jim Jordan's the chair and Congressman Massey's on it, so it is going to be a good committee.
Yeah.
And I could see why Klaus Schwab would want his man on there. Right. They're going to have fun and get something done. Yeah. So the next one we absolutely look forward to discussing.
Oh, Hillary Clinton. I mean, Catherine's favorite person to bash, I would say, it's Hillary Clinton. For good reason, for totally good reason. Hillary Clinton says it's time to ban cash to fight climate change. I mean, we've got two different.
Well, she doesn't want any leakage. She wants to be able to steal everything and funnel it into the Clinton Foundation.
Right. And here's a quote. Today, I'm proud to announce that the Clinton Global Initiative, started by my husband, we'll work closely with the SEWA and with our partners, the American India Foundation, Adrian Arsht Rockefeller Foundation, Resilience Center, the Desai Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Council for Inclusive Capitalism, and the Algorand Foundation. Now, you need to know who those are to avoid them. To launch a $50 million Global Climate Resilience Fund for women. And you got to throw women in there, you know? And you know, they're doing this in India, and we can be sure that nothing good will come of that.
Right. And if you don't like it, you'll end up like Epstein. Anyway, so Hillary Clinton, it's time to ban cash to fight climate change. So right. One of the things we're talking about, money and markets, was Nancy Mace's incredible interview of the Twitter executive. She's the congresswoman from South Carolina who publicly disclosed her vaccine injury from the second Pfizer shot. You know, the implication, I think, is that if Twitter hadn't censored the information and social media and media hadn't censored the information, you know, that she would never have gotten it, because I think she had immunity from COVID. She'd gotten it. And we started, John and I started to talk about, if you look at, here's a congresswoman saying to these executives, if you hadn't suppressed this, I might not be vaccine injured. And the clear implication is people have been injured and died because you censored legitimate and accurate information. And you should see the looks on their faces. And both of these people are sort of memorable looking. So they're going to be walking down the street, and they may be protected from the courts of law, but they're not protected from the court of popular opinion. And at this point,
you're a good rant. You look up Congresswoman Mace.
She's fabulous.
She really grilled the woman attorney who is in charge of censorship. And she said, what medical school did you go to? And of course, the woman said, well, I didn't go to medical school. And she said, well, and what right do you have to censor Stanford and Harvard trained doctors when they tell us something, you know, what their opinion is medically? It was really fabulous.
Well, and the attorney was finally beginning to realize, you know, this could, well, apparently the guy, his name is Roth, who used to run Trust and Safety, he's had to sell his home and leave San Francisco because it's not safe.
I get that completely.
Right. You know, so I wonder, I just don't know why Hillary Clinton feels safe in this world.
Makes you wonder, doesn't it?
It does. You know, maybe we're on our fifth double or something here. Okay, what's next?
The next one is from Gateway Pundit, and I wasn't originally going to include this because I just didn't know whether this could really be true. But I saw yesterday that Michael Caine on Children's Health Defense did a whole show on this subject, and it has to do, he's a former New York City teacher who lost his job because he wouldn't get the jab. And he interviewed a woman who is a mediator for the New York City teachers. And she confirmed this story, which is that in New York City, the teachers who choose not to get vaccinated are put on a list. And New York City education system has something that they flag in your personnel file, which is generally secret. You don't know it's there, but basically it's a flag in your file that says you're a problem teacher. And people who have that flag because of not getting the jab are reported to the FBI. And in addition, there is some rule that any job that they might get, presumably education related, if they leave the public school system, any contractor of the educational system cannot hire you. In other words, that keeps you from getting a job in your field in that area, because so many other alternative employers of a teacher would be getting money from the state educational fund. So relatively scary.
Yep. The subscriber said this is what fascism looks like, and that it's exactly the case. Okay, next.
The next one, blocking Syrian earthquake relief. And the commenter says, no discrimination when it comes to genocide tactics. Is this the plan for all of us besides a few smart cities they control 100%? Basically, what this is an interview with a reporter who's actually on the ground in Syria. And she says that U.S. aid to Syria is only going to the Al-Qaeda controlled area, which is funded by the U.S. And I think it's in the northern section of Syria. And the U.S. State Department or whoever speaks on behalf of the U.S. in their aid programs claims that the Syrian government won't let in humanitarian aid, but that she says that's false. And that the EU, the UK, and the U.S. have sanctioned Syria, and they're not dropping their sanctions in order to help people with the earthquake, which is truly a horrible earthquake. And she also says...
It was many earthquakes. It wasn't just one.
And it's not just Turkey, it's Turkey and Syria. And she also says Netanyahu says Israel is helping, but he's not. She says the whole humanitarian effort is totally politicized, which is not terribly surprising.
It's horrible. Okay, train derailment.
Now, this one is close to my heart and my home because I do live in Ohio. Although this is on the other side of Ohio, but there's a train derailment and there have been some fairly frightening results of this, which involve they burned the chemicals in order to prevent an explosion. But apparently the chemicals, when burned, they involve PVC type materials, vinyl chloride, and it turns into dioxin, which is of Agent Orange fame. But what this link points out is that there was a movie made by Netflix in 2022 about a train derailment in Ohio that released toxic chemicals. What can you say? My own personal observation is that the local news has been reporting fears that people have raised issues with our water. Is our water safe? Because we are on the Ohio River. And I will point out that the way the water flows are from East Palestine, Ohio, is that they flow into the Ohio River, which is very long, supplies drinking water to West Virginia, Ohio. Well, doesn't go that direction to West Virginia, but Ohio, Indiana, and ultimately flows into the Mississippi River. So this is a relatively big deal. And what they're saying here is 4 parts per billion is all that's in our water, they say. And EPA says it's okay to go up to 500 parts per billion, but they don't say what those chemicals are. And of course, the effects can be long term. And there are reports of chickens in East Palestine, Ohio that are dead. So, you know, the 24 hours, 48 hours after the after the release of the toxic chemicals. So we will probably hear more.
So we've been getting various reports about what was in the chemicals, and I just don't know what the truth is, but my real concern is this could spread badly, including down the rivers. So the idea of this polluting all of the Mississippi River is absolutely frightening.
Well, and it brings up the whole concept of shipping in on both rail and truck of toxic chemicals, because it's just a very, you know, this is like the gain of function research in labs. It's a dangerous thing to do. And you got to wonder if enough attention has been given to safety, particularly in light of potential issues of the keeping upkeep of the rail system. And if the rail system isn't kept up well, you end up with derailments. So
what John and I discussed today is this sabotage, you know, because you've had a bunch of derailments in the last couple of days.
Yeah, and there's a truck overturning of a truck with toxic chemicals within the last few days too.
Right. So the question is this sabotage, or is this just accidents that reflect the fact that we're dealing with an Atlas Shrugged scenario? You know, so we have a deterioration of maintenance of the rail lines or the roads, of the trucks, of the equipment, and we have a deterioration of sort of loyalty and competency, and you're in an Atlas Shrugged kind of situation.
Right.
And there's no way to know which it is, but either one is not good.
And the deterioration of the systems can arguably be related to the jabs also.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, that is an absolutely good point. Well, you know, I just think one way or another, we're, you know, it's Atlas Shrugged plus sabotage is what we're dealing with. Okay, right. Let's just pray for everybody there. Just really pray. We're all just going to have to start reading and practicing Joe Dispenza teaches. Okay, right. Next one.
The last one, I believe, is one that I just really loved, and I wouldn't have picked it out, but I went in and watched the whole thing. It's pretty long. Dark journalist and Gigi Young, who is a lovely medium. And I happen to have watched this within the same 24-hour period as the interview that you did with Ulrike. Pronounce her name?
Ulrike Groniger?
Yeah. And the two of those together was fabulous. They talk about interdimensionality and UFOs are mentioned, although not, you know, she says it's not space creatures coming from Mars. You know, we're talking about interdimensionality and things that you can't see, that electromagnetic, all sorts of forces that we don't understand. And in the interview that was just posted, we were talking about my favorite book, which is The Hidden Message in Water by a Japanese writer. And this was on the New York Times bestseller list years ago. But it has to do with, you know, most of our world is water, and water holds feelings and good and bad karma and things like that, and which affects plants and animals and human beings. And so I thought the two things together were very, very consistent, and having the dark journalist be the person who interviews Gigi Young brings more spice to the whole.
Yes. So he's interviewed her many times. She's kind of a regular,
right,
on his show, and I've always really liked her. I'm a subscriber of hers. Yep. So, and I don't get to listen to it as much as I like, but I've never listened to Gigi when she didn't have a very important or interesting insight that really informed me.
And, you know, she says that, and you can believe it or not, but I hope that it's true, that people who are gifted with the ability to be mediums, if you will, or to have these access to these other dimensions, are only given that gift if it's positive. It's not a bunch of evil people doing this. It's people who are
right.
Gifted.
So you'll hear one we know and love says, you know, in the highest and best interests of all concerned.
Right.
So your access really depends on, you know, being alignment in alignment with the divine intelligence.
Yes. But my strong recommendation is listen to the interview that we just posted on the Solari Report, and this, go through to this link and listen to that too. And it will enhance your experience in both respects.
Well, we certainly talk a lot about what it's going to take to really jump the curve in terms of our power vis-a-vis Mr. Global. That's what I most enjoy about it. So one more category, nothing and take action. The next category is other. Oh, and I just want to say thank you for your links. You guys send fabulous links. We learned a tremendous amount. Just when I think I know what's going on, I turn to the recommended links and I'm like, wow, am I out of it or what? Anyway, so I really appreciate it. Hi, Catherine. I live in a state which in theory approves of a medical or religious exemption, vaccine exemption for public and private schools, according to the Department of Health. I've applied to enroll my 3-year-old at preschool and was notified by the school director that while acknowledging that the director of health, Department of Health, does approve of religious exemption, the public and private schools, her school has made the difficult decision not to accept unvaccinated children. I responded via their email inquiring if their decision is in violation of state law or their school charter. I've yet to receive a response. Do you have any thoughts on whether these schools have any legal standing to decline a religious exemption approved by the State Department of Health? It's probably not someplace we want to enroll them given their position. However, as we look for alternatives, it's possible we'll receive other objections. I have no idea. It depends on state law. But what I would say is any school that would do that, you want nothing to do with. And I do think at some point you're going to have to homeschool or find alternative arrangements, unfortunately, because we pay our taxes, but then can't use the schools. I just think there's no way to use the schools. Any thoughts, Carolyn?
I have been historically a real supporter of the public school systems, and I'm even now finding out things that were being done or taught to my now 29-year-old that are shocking. So my advice to any parent now is absolutely know, be all over what the school curriculum is and know exactly what they're doing. I think that for the most part, what tends to happen is that school systems in regard to masking and other mandates kind of pick up what is the safest thing to do in terms of if you were criticized and somebody got sick or whatever. So they go off the deep end in a way that's not justified and might not even be sanctioned by state law. And the only way that you're going to get those policy changed is for a whole bunch of parents to make a stink. And there's nothing scarier than a mama bear with an issue. So if you're going to keep your kids in a school system, be all over it and be a mama bear with an issue on anything they're doing that is suspect, and raise the issue of whether things are consistent with state law if you suspect that they're not, because a lot of times the school systems will do things that are not sanctioned by state law, and they do it until they can't get away with it any longer.
Okay. Have you watched the 10-part series on Europa from Ed Dowd's website? No, I have not, but I will endeavor to check it out because we're always on the hunt for good documentaries. Then you have mentioned a couple times that 2023 is the year things have to get around. Why is this year so critical if 2030 was the year for CBDC? I think CBDCs can go into effect in from 25 to 2030. And it's hard, it's long, it's complicated. But 2030 is when the boat hits the iceberg. 2023 is when the boat has to turn so that it doesn't hit the iceberg. You can't wait until the final click, because you hit a point of no return. It's like, you know, I flew to Tokyo and three times we had to turn back to San Francisco. And the fourth time we had an engine go out, but it was after the plane passed the point of no return. So if you don't make significant progress in 2023, you are approaching the point of no return. Is it possible 2024? I wouldn't even worry about it. I would just say, get it done this year. it's if we don't make a huge change this year, it's going to get that much harder. I mean, we have kicked the can for 50 years. Well, maybe we should stop kicking the can.
Right. I think that the significance of 2030 is it's a round number. I don't think it's really necessarily magic. And the other thing is 2023 is May 2023 is when they're voting on the WHO in International Health Amendments and the Pandemic Treaty, which is one of the two final, you know, doors to shut on the control grid, and the other one being the CBDC. So it's all coordinated. It's all part of the same.
Right now, we still have a basic law and constitutional framework that we can use to stop. So, for example, in the United States, we still have a constitutional framework and we still own guns. Do you really want to wait until those two things are gone and try and stop it then?
Right.
Okay. I don't know. I have a hard time understanding the question given the urgency of the matter. And then the last question we get is, how did Amazon scam you? I don't know that Amazon did scam us. What happened was Amazon put through a charge, and the charge, I think it came in, I'm trying to remember where it came in. I think it came into our bank account, but it was a charge directly to our bank account for $153 for a full year membership for some kind of Prime. And I don't think it was any on my old accounts. I think it was on somebody had created a Solaria account once upon a time. So I don't know how it got there, but we called Amazon and had it taken off and got it reversed. So I think if the account still existed, we made sure it was closed. So
the bigger problem is PayPal, but yes.
Right. Although, you know, we've made enormous, we started working to get away from PayPal in 2012, and we've made enormous progress, but we're not 100% of the way there. Now, I expected them to throw us off, you know, by now, but their stock has plummeted and they're under severe competition. And now that we're going through this period where everybody's getting yelled at for censorship, I think they've been more careful.
Well, the other thing about Amazon is that they're running the cloud services, and that are relatively ubiquitous among banks and all sorts of places. So Amazon, the retailer, is a different related, but
right.
A different phenomenon than Amazon, the runner of all data and keeper of the cloud.
Right. Okay, Carolyn, that's it for this week. We won't have an Ask Catherine. I'm headed to Switzerland tomorrow, and I'll be back on next Tuesday. So it's just a quick round trip, and I'm looking forward. We're gonna do some recordings of Thomas Meyer for Spiritual Science Academy, and we've got some other great activities going on. Anyway, so quick round trip to Switzerland, and then I'll be back, and then but it won't be till the following week that we do Ask Catherine. So I'll do Financial Rebellion from the road somewhere in a roadside stand in Germany with you tomorrow, and then we'll be back on Financial Rebellion, and then we'll be back in 2 weeks. So if you didn't get your question answered, we only answered questions coming in by February 13th, and everything else will skip to 2 weeks from now. If your question did come in by February 13th, but we didn't get it, please let us know. Any other thoughts before we close?
Don't think so, but Financial Rebellion should be a lot of fun tomorrow. And of course, it'll be archived on our site and Children's Health Defense. So,
yeah, and our topic is
CBDCs and sex.
Yep. So check it out. Okay, Carolyn, have a great evening. And thanks for joining me on Ask Catherine.
Okay.
Bye.